You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. My name is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. Welcome to our show this morning on this beautiful September Friday morning. We're here in Chicago, Illinois, talking about public policy issues and public policy issues that affect the Catholic Church. I am the executive director of the Catholic Conference, and for those of you who have listened to the show in the past, you'll probably remember that I've had co-hosts in the past, of which all have abandoned me this morning. So I'm here all by my lonesome in this big, huge studio. But somehow or another, we will manage to get through to this together. So if you're interested in calling our program this morning, the number is area code 312-751-1979. And this morning, we're going to be talking a little bit about an issue that's not necessarily a legislative issue, but it was a legislative issue about 10 years ago, believe it or not. Legislation passed in Illinois regarding a mandate to have parents be notified that their children might be receiving a procedure, an abortion-related procedure, and it's been tied up through some bureaucratic opposition. And what we're going to do this morning is talk a little bit about that issue and where it is, and we have some exciting developments, hopefully, that are pending about that issue. We'll be talking with Attorney Paul Linton this morning. But before we introduce Paul, I'll just make a brief statement that in terms of where we are on our calendar, which is mid-September, and we're in the midst of the election cycle. So the public policy issues that are facing the church, at least in Springfield, are more or less on probably what you would say behind the scenes, with maybe not the legislature meeting so much, but there's also a lot of effort going on in meetings and some administrative rules and things like that. So during the non-legislative session, our focus turns to that. Also, a lot of our work also focuses on what's happening in Washington, and from time to time we do get called in to assist on federal legislative matters, and probably one of those issues that's pending most right now is the whole continuing issue on immigration reform. But we'll not be talking about those issues today. We're going to talk a little bit about, like I said, the issue of parental notification and what's going on in Illinois. So with that, what I'd like to do is bring on my first guest this morning, and I should add that we'll be doing an abbreviated show this morning. We'll be concluding at 9:30, and after that time, Father Robert Barron will be there'll be other programming after the 9:30 hour. So we're only on the air for a half hour this morning, so I guess my advice to you would be to get in your calls if you're interested in joining our conversation. And I promise that this will be a very engaging conversation. Paul Linton is very knowledgeable in this area. So with that, I'll introduce Paul, see if he's on the phone, if our technology's working this morning. Paul, are you there?
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, we're one for one. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Paul, before we get into the subject matter, perhaps we could just kind of introduce you and your involvement. I know for this particular case, I think you're being called a special counsel to the Thomas More Society. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But in general, I know you're an attorney in private practice, and you've been involved with the life issues for a number of years. So maybe if you could just give our listeners a brief background on some of the issues that you've been involved with in the past, because I know they're quite lengthy, and there's quite a few of them.
Certainly. Well, I've been involved in the pro-life movement and the pro-family movement for almost 20 years professionally. I was at Americans United for Life for about 8 years and left as general counsel about 10 years ago to go into my own practice. I filed front of the court briefs and briefs on behalf of parties and interveners in the United States Supreme Court, the lower federal courts, and almost half of the state reviewing courts throughout the United States on abortion law, euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, and the sanctity of marriage issue. So there's a broad range of issues I've been involved in. Principally, my practice concentrates on marriage law, abortion consulting, and abortion law.
Hmm, interesting. Any cases that listeners might be particularly familiar with in addition to this case?
Certainly. The Supreme Court will be hearing oral arguments on November 8th in two cases challenging the federal partial birth abortion law. One case originated in California. The other one originated in Nebraska. Those two will be heard together on November 8th. and the court will probably decide the case sometime between early next year and the end of their term, say at the end of June of next year.
That's the partial birth abortion case that we've read so much about in the media.
That's correct. And this
has been around for years.
Yeah, so this is a new law. It's a better crafted law than the one that was challenged before, the state law of Nebraska back in 2000. And I think there's a fair shot that this law will be upheld. Plus, there's been a change in personnel in the court.
Right.
And that is Justice Alito has replaced Justice O'Connor. And that could represent a net gain of one on this issue, and one vote would be enough to uphold the law in addition to the four that were previously on the court.
Right. There's that could be an exciting development, which could be, you said that the oral arguments will be heard November 8th?
8th, yes.
Wow, that's right after the election. Interesting.
The day after the election, yeah.
Yeah, that's very, so, and that decision could be come down early in 07, I take it.
Anywhere from early in 07 until the end of the term, which would be late June. It really depends upon how fractured the court is an issue, how many dissents there are, and how long it takes to go back and forth between the different parties.
Well, best of luck on that case. I know that's something that we've been following for years. Unfortunately, it's been far too long, and it seems like it just never seems to end, and just when it's over, it's not over. But I think it's from best we can tell that there's a decent chance, hopefully, of us prevailing on that case this time around. But time will tell, I guess. Paul, let's jump a little bit into the subject matter this morning, which is the whole issue of parental notification. And this also has a long, long, detailed history. I think that the original legislation requiring parental notification passed, what was it, back in 1995?
That's correct.
So in 1995, the General Assembly passed this law, which would have required a parent?
Yes.
Describe the law.
The law basically, it's a one-parent notice law, which means before a minor, that is a girl under the age of 18, gets an abortion, she has to notify one of her parents of her intent to do so, or her physician would have to notify them. The law also allows notification to, of course, a legal guardian or a step-parent or grandparent who lives in the same household with the minor. The law, the Illinois General Assembly passed this law in 1995. The statute itself is constitutional. However, to go into effect, the law required an appeal rule to be adopted by the Illinois Supreme Court, and that's been the hang-up in the last 10 or 11 years.
And that was 10 years ago that the court failed to promulgate the rule.
That's right. The law was passed and would have become effective on June 1st of 1995. There was an immediate challenge to it in federal court on a number of grounds, one of which was that there was no appeal mechanism in case a minor went to court to avoid notifying her parents, and her effort to avoid notifying them was denied by a circuit court judge. She would be entitled to appeal that to our appellate court, but only the Illinois Supreme Court can issue rules for appeals. The legislature requested the court to do so in the legislation that was passed in 1995, and in late in December of 1995, the court advised the then Attorney General Jim Ryan that it was not going to issue any judicial bypass appeal rule. There was no explanation in the letter from the court administrator on why the court was not going to do that. There was quite an outcry in the media about this. Both the Sun-Times and the Tribune came out with very strong editorials against what the court had done. The court then in late January came out with a five-page letter purporting to explain why it did not issue the rules. The explanation, however, really doesn't seem to have much substance to it, in my judgment. But nevertheless, they refused to issue the rule.
We're talking this morning with Paul Linton, who is the special counsel for the Thomas More Society. Paul has been involved with this case pending regarding the parental notification and trying to promulgate rules such that the law can take action and become into effect. If you want to join our conversation, the number is area code 312-751-1979. Paul, why don't you talk a little bit about, I know other states surrounding Illinois have parental notification laws, is that correct?
Yes, every state that borders Illinois has either a parental consent or a parental notice law on the books and in force. Illinois is the only Midwestern state, and frankly one of the few states in the country, that does not have either a notice or a consent law in effect. We have one on the books, it's just not in effect because the Illinois Supreme Court would not issue these judicial bypass rules. And And during the last 10 years, or the last 10 years for which statistics are available, from 1995 through 2004, almost 40,000 abortions were performed on Illinois minors in the state, and not one of those minors was under any legal obligation to notify either of her parents of her intention to get an abortion, nor was the abortion doctor required to do so. In addition to that, about 12,000 adolescents from other states had abortions in Illinois, and no doubt a significant number of them were also minors under the laws of their states or our state. So it's clear that the fact that we don't have a law in effect is acting as a magnet for minors from bordering states who want to evade the parental notice or consent laws in their state. So they simply come to Illinois and get an abortion.
Right. We have to take a quick break. We're on the phone. We're talking with Paul Linton, who's the special counsel for Thomas More Society, on the phone this morning. We're talking about the parental notification law that hopefully will be coming to effect in Illinois in the next couple months or so. If you're interested in joining our conversation or have concerns or comments about what we've heard or talked about this morning, give us a call at area code 312-751-1979. We'll be back after this brief message.
Poverty is no stranger to Illinois. The number of people living in poverty in this state has jumped by more than 30% in the last 5 years. We have the highest rate of deep poverty in the Midwest. The poor are not only growing in numbers, they're also getting poorer. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development breaks the cycle of poverty. It funds programs to create jobs, increase affordable housing, and protect the rights of workers, seniors, immigrants, and the disabled. Please support the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Help break the cycle of poverty.
Deep down at the bottom of your soul, there's a longing and a hunger for something that nothing in this world can satisfy. It's a hunger for God.
That's Father Robert Barron, theologian, teacher, and dynamic speaker, who can be heard nationwide with his Word on Fire radio homilies. On Sunday evening, October 1st, Father Barron will be the featured speaker at an old-fashioned Catholic tent revival. It will be an evening of lively sacred music, devotional prayer, and words of inspiration from Father Barron. The music starts at 6 p.m. Sunday, October 1st at St. Stephen Deacon and Martyr Church in Tinley Park. It's all part of Mission Chicago, and you can go to our website at www.missionchicago.net for more information. Hope to see you October 1st for an evening of worship under the tent.
Once you've heard the good news, then you have this inner compulsion to share the good news with your world.
This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. The number is 312-751-1979 if you want to join our conversation, talk about parental notification laws in Illinois and our efforts to enact one, and hopefully this will come to fruition soon. Paul, one of the things you were saying at the break, I think that's confusing for me and perhaps for a lot of the other listeners, is how do we treat the situation? I think we all are hopeful that there would be a situation where there's one or two parents in the home, but we know from time to time that that's not the case, where parents are being raised by step-parents or other people in the home. And I know that's one of the things with this whole effort that's a little tricky in terms of who has to be notified when there's not a parent. Is that one of the issues that you hear in terms of objections to enacting this law?
It shouldn't be an objection to this law, because this law allows notification to be given to not just a parent, but also a legal guardian, as well as either a step-parent or grandparent who lives in the same household. If a minor is, in fact, a minor and not emancipated, that is, she's not married, she's not been in the military, she has not gone through a formal emancipation process, which is a legal process to become emancipated, then she's under someone's authority, either a parent or a legal guardian or a close relative, and the notice would have to be given to one of those persons.
And is this the way it's handled in some other states as well? I would imagine it varies a little bit.
It does. Some states require notice or allow a notice to be given or consent to be obtained only from a parent or legal guardian. Other states will broaden the categories to maybe adult adult relatives. Some states even go beyond that. I think Illinois is somewhere in between there. In most cases, the notice would have to be given to a parent, though, because a minor in most circumstances will be living with at least one of her parents.
And the law requires the doctor to notify.
That's correct. Now, there are exceptions in the law in the case of abuse related reasons for not giving notice. And even if the minor does not fall within one of those exceptions, she can still go to court and ask a court to excuse the physician from complying with the notice requirement. That's called a bypass hearing. And the law provides for that. What the law cannot provide for, because it's up to the court to do, is to provide the appeal mechanism in case the trial judge says no.
Is there any evidence, as far as you're aware of, I think you were indicating that a lot before the break, that a lot of the surrounding states have parental notification laws. I think Wisconsin does, Missouri I'm pretty sure does. Is there any evidence to suggest in those states where those laws are in effect that they actually can reduce the number of abortions, or is that not the case?
Yes, there have been various studies done of the impact of parental notice and consent statutes, and the figures vary, obviously, depending upon the studies, how the study is put together, but there are indications that they can reduce the numbers of abortions, and not just abortions, but out-of-wedlock births and pregnancies among unmarried teens by 25% or more, depending upon the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that you can get into arguments about what the exact figure is, but it's a significant reduction. And we know from statistics provided by the Illinois Department of Public Health that from 1995 through 2004, about 12,000 adolescents came into Illinois from other states to get abortions. Now, adolescence means anyone 19 and under. Obviously,
okay.
If they're 18 or 19, they're adults. But a significant majority of them, I think it would be fair to assume, were minors under their laws and our laws.
So how many did you say?
I think a significant majority probably would be underage.
Paul, if we have I believe we have a phone call on the line. I think it's Carl from, I think you might be from Chicago. Carl, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Yes, I do. My question is in regards to parental notification in the context of the new All Kids legislation that was passed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's any type of notification or, frankly, any type of language in that All Kids program with respect to either the kids that are covered seeking or obtaining abortions, or whether or not the All Kids program covers things like condoms or abortion-inducing chemicals. I just was wondering, Bob, in your context of your work with the Catholic Conference, if you've had any luck looking at that All Kids program and getting certain restrictions in there that are friendly to our view of social teachings. And I'll hang up and let you guys discuss that. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul, my understanding of the All Kids program is that it's the same requirements in the state Medicaid program. Is that your understanding?
I really can't answer that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Carl, my knowledge, I have to go back and look at it, is that when All Kids was done, because I know many of the expansions that they have talked about in terms of family care, and I'm assuming it's All Kids as well, have the same requirements that exist under the existing Medicaid program. I think that's the easiest way for them to do it. So I think on many of those cases that some of those services that you were talking about would be covered.
That should not affect, of course, how a parental notice law operates, if it's in effect.
Right. Parental notification would be separate and apart from the All Kids, as far as I can understand.
That's right. I just want to throw a little background in terms of how we're going about what we're trying to do with this this issue. Back in June, in late June, the DuPage County State's Attorney, Joseph Burkett, filed a petition with the Illinois Supreme Court asking them to adopt the rule necessary to put this law into effect. And then last week, on behalf of the Catholic Conference of Illinois and a number of other interested organizations and Right to Life and family groups, we filed a supplemental petition asking them to adopt an appropriate rule. This is not actually a case in the Supreme Court. It's more of a rule issuing process that we're involved in.
Mm-hmm. With that, we're going to have to take a brief break, I'm told, here at 20 after the hour. If you want to join our conversation with Paul Linton, who is the special counsel for St. Thomas More Society regarding the parental notification rules that are pending before the Illinois Supreme Court, you can call us at area code 312-751-1979, and we'll be back for the final 10 minutes of the segment after this brief message.
Come join us for three nights of Spirit-filled praise and worship. The Black Catholic community of the Archdiocese of Chicago, in cooperation with Mission Chicago, invites everyone to attend the Black Catholic Revival, No Ways Tired, celebrating our heritage, creating our future. This revival will appeal to all Catholics with dynamic national speakers, gospel choirs, and liturgical dancers. It will be held Tuesday through Thursday evenings, September 26th through the 28th, at 7 p.m. at Old St. Mary's Church, 1500 South Michigan Avenue in Chicago. Call 312-751-8377 for more information. I'm Sheila Adams, Director of the Office for Black Catholics. I invite all Catholics from our diverse archdiocese to attend No Ways Tired and set your spirit on fire.
Each year in Chicago, 3,000 children are reported sexually abused. The Chicago Children's Advocacy Center restores the trust that was once lost. It's a place where professionals come together under one roof and abused children tell their stories. A place where they can get help immediately. Support the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. For more information or to help, call 1-877-703-HOPE or visit chicagocac.org.
Hello, this is Bob Gilligan, and we're back for the final 10 minutes of our segment. I should add, before we jump into our conversation, that everybody out there is invited to attend a memorial mass this Sunday for the repose of the soul of Johannes Cardinal Willebrands. Cardinal Willebrands was a pioneer in both ecumenical and Christian-Jewish relations, and he was president of the Pontifical Council and promoting Jewish Christian unity. The Most Reverend Basil Meeking, who worked with Cardinal Willebrands for 18 years, will be the principal celebrant for the Memorial Mass this Sunday at 12:30 in the afternoon at Holy Name Cathedral. So if you have some time and you're interested, come out on Sunday at Holy Name Cathedral. I'm sure this Bishop Meeking would be pleasantly surprised to see you, and I'm sure it'll be a great occasion. We're joining our conversation with Paul Linton, who's the special counsel to the Thomas More Society. Paul, you know, one of the things that we all assume is everybody knows who's on the Illinois Supreme Court, and we all assume everybody knows who their state rep and state congressman is and that sort of thing. But maybe we should just talk a little bit about the Illinois Supreme Court and who's on it for people out there who might be aware of the seven members.
Certainly. The Illinois Supreme Court is composed of seven elected justices, three from Cook County, and one from each of the other four appellate districts in Illinois. The three from Cook County are Justice Freeman, Justice Fitzgerald, and Justice Burke, Ann Burke, who just replaced Justice McMorrow. And the justices from the other districts in Illinois are Justice Chief Justice Thomas, Bob Thomas, Justice Kilbride, Justice Carmeier, and Justice Garmon, Rita Garmon. So there are seven, and I'm glad you asked that question. Only one of the justices who was on the court back in 1995 when the court refused to adopt the bypass appeal rule is still on the court. That's Justice Freeman from Chicago. The other six are all new to the court since 1995.
And the judges, they're elected?
They are elected. They're elected initially, and then they have a 10-year term, and then every 10 years they appear on a retention vote, which is simply an up or down vote on whether or not they should be retained for another 10 years, and they have to get a 60% favorable approval in order to be retained. None of the justices is up for election or retention this year.
Yeah. That's one of the things I think find interesting is I think many people that I've talked to about this issue, they don't even, unfortunately, many of them don't even realize that there is an Illinois Supreme Court. They think of the United States Supreme Court. People are familiar with it, but very few people are familiar with what goes on at the Illinois Supreme Court or the court system for that matter.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think too long, many of us have frankly, ignored the significance of the court's role in fashioning public policy. There's no question that it has a significant role. Certainly the U.S. Supreme Court has, and state courts can have that role too. So it's important to pay attention to, you know, who is running for election, who's running for retention on state courts at all levels, as well as who's being appointed to the federal judiciary by the president.
Absolutely, and I think we've seen that with other cases as well, with the governor's executive orders regarding the pharmacists. We've seen the experience we've had in state court, which has not been too favorable, as opposed to the federal courts, which where we at least have a, it seems like a fighting chance. I know there's different standards and different laws that apply, but I think you're right. I think this is one of the areas where we don't know who's on these courts, and unfortunately, many times, we find out their tendencies and biases before it's probably a little too late.
I think that's right. Now, the Illinois Supreme Court has not ruled on any abortion-related issues in terms of whether or not the Illinois Constitution protects the right to abortion separate from the federal Constitution, but a number of state courts have, and a number of them have ruled, in my judgment, the wrong way on that, so it's certainly something to keep an eye on. Something else I want to add about the significance of this statute that we're talking about, this Parental Notice Act of 1995, I'd like to point out to your listeners that a significant percentage, perhaps a majority, of minors who are impregnated by sexual relations are impregnated by adult males. And obviously an abortion allows that that relationship to continue to go unrecognized and undisclosed to the parents, whereas if a parental notice or consent law is in effect, in normal circumstances, they will learn of the child's pregnancy because they have to be notified of her intention to get an abortion, and that may help bring that relationship to an end. But there is a real problem with adult male sexual predators dealing
right.
with female minors, and this law would help to address that.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to those individuals that go to a lot of the clinics and do prayer vigils, and they, many of them will say that a significant number of young women coming in are being escorted in by gentlemen who are quite older.
Yes, and sometimes you have boyfriends who are impersonating fathers, although in Illinois that isn't even necessary because you don't need notice or consent because our law is not in effect. Your listeners may also be interested in knowing, you know, what practically can they do about this issue.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Yeah, what can people do?
I think there's a couple things they could do. They could certainly write letters to members of the Illinois Supreme Court simply asking them to act favorably upon the petition that was filed by State's Attorney Burkett and the supplemental petition that we filed. That could be, you know, a very short letter, just expressing their support for the law and asking that the rules be adopted so it can go into effect. Perhaps something that would also be helpful, if they live in counties where there are a significant number of abortions performed, obviously that would include Cook County, but also DuPage and a number of Lake County, a number of other counties, they might want to consider writing to their state's attorney for that county and asking him or her to join the petition that we filed or State's Attorney Burkett's petition or to file their own. But in any event, to show support among the elected local officials who have some of the enforcement responsibility under this law.
And if people are confused about who their state's attorney may be, if they don't quite understand that, they can always call our offices at 312-368-1066, and we can find out who their state's attorney is, because I realize that everybody actually has that information at their fingertips.
No, of course not.
Yeah, kind of like our conversation about the Supreme Court and members of the Supreme Court from Illinois. Paul, any last words in our final 30 seconds or so?
Well, I just think people should understand this is a very important issue. Illinois is one of the very few states that does not have an enforceable parental notice or consent statute on the books. People should be concerned about this. They should follow it. They should encourage the Supreme Court to adopt an appropriate rule, and they should ask their local state's attorney, if it's not Mr. Burkett, obviously he's already filed a petition, to support this law and ask the court to adopt an appropriate rule.
And give us a time horizon when the court might start to consider this request?
It depends upon whether or not they go through a more formal rule adopting procedure. It could be a matter of weeks or a matter of months. It's really difficult to say at this point.
Great. Paul, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Bob.
We're going to have to sign off here in a minute. And Paul, not only thanks for your time this morning, but all the other work that you've done in standing up for right to life issues. I know at times it's not easy, and I know you spend a lot of time, energy, and effort on it, and the work you do is always well received. Paul, thanks again.
Thank you, Bob.
And thanks for all listening this morning, and we'll be back in the third Monday of the month of October with another program about public policy issues facing Illinois. This is Bob Gilligan, and thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Sean Harriott. Join me 6 days a week as we help bridge the gap between faith and everyday life, talking about the intersection of faith and everyday life, and help you live your life in the world as a Catholic.
Plus, get all the latest Chicagoland news, traffic, and weather. Start your day with Morning Air on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. It's the Morning Air.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at CatholicNewWorld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio, 820 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
As a parent, are you concerned about your children getting involved with drugs and alcohol? If there was a simple way to help prevent your child from becoming involved with drugs and alcohol, wouldn't you want to know about it? Stay tuned, because this morning we'll be talking about some simple things you can do to keep your children and family safe. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Catholic Families Today on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. My name is Frank Hannigan. I'm the Director of the Family Ministries Office for the Archdiocese, and I'm your host each month for Catholic Families Today. My co-host today is Elsie Radke, the Divorce and Annulment Support Ministry Coordinator, as well as the Associate Director for the Family Ministries Office. Welcome, Elsie.
Good morning, Frank.
Our special guest today is Joseph Califano, Jr., the president of the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University. He was also the United States Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Jimmy Carter. He's here to talk with us today about Family Day. Welcome to the show, Mr. Califano.
Oh, it's nice to be with you, Frank.
Aside from these important political accomplishments, Mr. Califano is known to many of us in the Archdiocese who have gone through the annulment process. In his book, Inside a Public and Private Life, he details going through the annulment process himself. The section called The Annulment, One Catholic's Journey of Reconciliation, is recommended reading for people going through the annulment process in this area.
Mr. Califano, your office, the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, is sponsoring Family Day on September 25th, so coming up next week, next Monday. Can you tell us a little bit about Family Day? What's it all about? How did you get involved with it?
Well, we every year we survey 12 to 17-year-olds to try and determine those circumstances and characteristics and situations that will increase or decrease the risk that they will smoke, drink, and use drugs. And we've been doing this now for 11 years. We've had 10 surveys. And we noticed in 1996 that kids who never had dinner with their parents were much likely to smoke, drink, and use drugs than kids who had dinner with their parents every night. So over the ensuing years, the past 10 years, we have done the survey in a way so that we can compare kids having dinners, you know, from 0 to 7. And what we found is that one of the most decisive factors in keeping kids away from drugs and alcohol and smoking is frequent family dinners. Kids who have dinner with their parents 5 or more times a week are much less likely to smoke, to drink, or to use drugs, and compared to kids who have dinner with their parents 2 times a week or less. So we began promoting Family Day, a day to eat dinner with your children. We had President Bush proclaim it in 2001. It was right after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the president will proclaim it. Almost every governor in the country will proclaim it. More than 600 cities and counties will proclaim it. And you know, it's not have dinner that night with your kids. It's to remind parents of how important dinner is.
It's like a little parenting skill mini seminar, if you will.
That's right. And, you know, it's a time to listen to your kids, to talk to your kids, to see your kids, to develop a relationship. Because, you know, if the only thing you ever say to your kids is don't use drugs and you don't have any other relationship with them, that'll go in one ear and out the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's simply not going to make it. Mr. Calfano, let me ask, were you and the other researchers surprised when you found out how important dinners were?
Well, we were surprised. You know, we there are a lot of other factors.
Uh-huh.
And dinners, we now, you know, we're learning is really parents who take the time in this day and age to have dinner with their kids that frequently are parents who are really engaged in their kids' lives. They care. We've done focus groups with kids, and they say, you know, it shows my parents really care. They both work. Or even my father comes home late from work. We wait and have dessert with him when he has his dinner. I mean, it's really quite a thing. And as we looked at it, you know, we know the things that increase the risk that a kid will get into drugs. Stress is one.
Mm-hmm.
Kids that are stressed out all the time. But kids that have frequent family dinners are much less likely to be stressed out. Kids that are bored most of the time are likely to use drugs. But again, we found that kids who have frequent family dinners are much less likely to be bored a lot.
It probably gives them a good place to process all of the information that comes at them from everywhere, from school, from their friends, from their neighborhood, from TV, from music. I would think that's very I mean, I'm not a 12-year-old anymore, but I bet that's overwhelming.
No, and it's very important, and it's important because the other thing is kids who have parents who eat frequently with their kids are much likely to know their kids' friends.
Mm-hmm.
They're much likely to know the parents of their kids' friends. And this becomes very important because in this year's survey, we asked parents about the parties and kids. We did a lot of questions about parties, and what we found was that parents just have no idea what's going on in their teen's world, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 80% of the parents said that the marijuana and alcohol were not available at their teen's parties,
mm-hmm.
but the very teens of these parents, more than half of them, said marijuana and alcohol were usually available at the parties they went to.
Yeah, I remember I was a school teacher many years ago, and some of the freshmen in high school came back to show their old eighth grade teacher pictures of them at a forest preserve holding up cans of beer, and this was the same time their parents were saying, our children would never drink. I'm thinking, you know, you don't realize what your kids are doing.
That's right, and this helps you get to know them. The other thing that's, you know, incidentally, I should mention that we would love... We're urging parents to pledge to have dinner that night, and they can go on our website at CASAFamilyDay.org, CASAFamilyDay.org, and just pledge to have dinner, get a little certificate.
So they can actually go online and make this commitment.
They go online and make the commitment.
Okay.
And we'd love to have them do it. Last year, 1.2 million Americans did it, and we expect to have a lot more this year. And I think, you know, again, just back on the family, you know, kids get, we learned another thing over the years with our survey that kids get their sense of morality from their parents. And kids in this age group that think it's immoral for someone their age to use these substances
mm-hmm.
are much less likely to use. And that's a greater motivation, incidentally, than the illegality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the other thing just is it is important for parents to send a clear message because one of the most controlling factors here is if kids believe their parents think their parents would be deeply disturbed or very disturbed if they smoked or drank or used drugs, those kids are much less likely to use them.
Are they worried about their parents being disappointed in them, or is it disturbed?
Well, disturbed was the word we used in the survey, so
okay.
I go on that. And the other thing, I mean, and Kids who have frequent, incidentally, parents who have frequent family dinners with their kids are much less likely to take their kids to religious services on a regular basis. And we know, again, over actually in every survey we've done over the last 11 years, 10 years of surveys, that kids who go to religious services regularly, go to Mass or Protestant church or a synagogue or a mosque, those kids are much less likely to smoke, drink, and use drugs than kids who don't go to religious services or for whom religion is not an important part of their life. And at this age, 12 to 17, in this country at this time, that comes from parents.
It absolutely does. Mr. Calfano, we're going to have to take a break now, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. We're talking this morning with Joseph Calfano about Family Day, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll keep our discussion going.
Poverty is no stranger to Illinois. The number of people living in poverty in this state has jumped by more than 30% in the last 5 years. We have the highest rate of deep poverty in the Midwest. The poor are not only growing in numbers, they're also getting poorer. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development breaks the cycle of poverty. It funds programs to create jobs, increase affordable housing, and protect the rights of workers, seniors, immigrants, and the disabled. Please support the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Help break the cycle of poverty.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Welcome back to Catholic Families Today on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. I'm your host, Frank Hannigan, along with my co-host, Elsie Radke. And we're talking this morning with Joseph Calfano about Family Day. And Mr. Calfano, before the break, we were talking, just began talking a little bit about the role of religion and faith and going to church that, you know, it plays a role in children not using drugs or alcohol. Why is that so?
Well, I think it's got to be that it gives them a sense of moral values, gives them a sense of you know, that they are creatures of God, that using this stuff can demean their humanity and demean their dignity that God gave them. I mean, we in the survey we didn't get into the kind of statements I just made, but the survey simply said, ask kids how often they went to religious services, or in 1 year we asked them whether religion was an important part of their life. And what it showed was that those kids that regularly go to Mass or church or synagogue are much less likely to get into drugs and this stuff.
So parents wondering, well, you know, should I bring my children to church? The answer, of course, is yes. And
yes.
Start when they're young and do it for lots of reasons, not the least of which is it's also something that helps them in their everyday life dealing with issues such as drugs and alcohol.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you know, and in this society, in this day and age, which is so materialistic, so instant gratification, so driven in that direction, 12 to 17-year-old kids, by and large, are not going to church on their own. They're going if their parents take them. And that makes parents important. I should mention, parents are really the key to dealing with the drug problem in this country. There are two things to remember. One, if a kid gets through age 21 without smoking, without using illegal drugs, and without abusing alcohol, most of them will drink, that kid is virtually certain to be home free for the rest of his or her life. That's number one. That puts a tremendous premium on parents. And our now 15 years of research here makes us believe that this problem of drugs is going to be solved, you know, not in courtrooms, not in legislative committee rooms, but in living rooms and dining rooms and across kitchen tables and by parents, not by judges, not by politicians. Parents are the key here, and parents have more power than they realize.
Absolutely. We talk about parents being the primary or first educators when it comes to their religious faith of their children, and I certainly believe that's true, but and the church has to back up what the parents teach. It works together, but that's also true when it comes to drugs and alcohol. You said earlier, sending a clear message to their children, bringing them to church, talking about, not wanting them to use drugs and alcohol, having dinners with them, knowing their friends, spending time with their children, all these things work together to support children in their developmental years.
That's right. And a lot of parents say, what's the point of talking to my teen? He doesn't listen to me, or she's not listening to me. Well, they are listening. They are. It looks like they're not, and they're, of course, or other parents say, I really want to get along with my teen. Well, in this day and age, I say to parents, if you're getting along with your teen every minute of every day, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, how about it?
I mean, you really, you're not a pal, you're a parent. And, they can complain like crazy about curfews. They don't want a curfew. Why do I have to have a curfew? My friend doesn't have a curfew. But when we do focus groups with these kids and you really start to probe them, they say, the fact that my parents have a curfew, it does show they care about me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it puts some limits. It gives them limits that maybe they can't even impose themselves. They need their parents to do that for them.
That's exactly right. They need their parents to teach them, give them not just the will to say no, but the skills to say no.
Mr. Califano, years ago, when I was growing up, and I grew up in a very large family, and we had all of our meals, of course, at home, dinner around the table every night. Even people who worked, a plate of food was kept for them so that when they came home from work, they could eat. And we've gotten away from that norm. Why do you suppose that is? What's happened?
Well, a lot has happened. I mean, one is there are a lot of two-parent families in which both parents are working. There are a lot of people holding down more than one job because of the economic problems. The cost of living in our country, particularly in our big cities. There are a lot of single-parent mothers. But also, I think even among people who have the resources, the wealth, we find in our surveys, affluent kids are no more likely to have frequent family dinners than poor kids with a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of selfishness here. There's an element of not caring, of not realizing how important it is.
Yeah.
Now, we've made some progress. I mean, when we started doing this, really started pushing this in 2001, about 48% of the teens said that they had dinners five or more times a week, and now it's up to about 58%.
Mm-hmm.
So we are making
some progress. But, if I could wave a wand and tell parents, whenever I go and talk, I tell parents, look, just have dinner with your kids night after night. Believe me, it has an enormous impact on them. And it's simple. It's easy. And turn the television off, incidentally.
Yeah, it seems like so many times that there's so much else going on at the same time. Somebody told me a long time ago that what has really damaged the family is the microwave. That, the fact that, and I'm not talking about, microwaves
yeah.
coming out of it. I'm talking about the fact that, you don't have to sit down anymore. Just put a, plate, on the side for Johnny when he gets home after practice or the game or whatever it might be. He can nuke it and eat it by himself, and there goes the family. It wasn't like what Elsie said earlier where, everyone sort of waited around, and when Dad got home or the last one got home, now let's eat.
That's right. Another thing that's happened, you asked, why is it so hard? And this is particularly true in suburban America. I mean, these kids have so many activities.
They're so scheduled. That's a good
They're
point.
They're scheduled. Yeah. They've got a soccer game. They've got this. They've got that.
Right.
So they don't get home. And we have to realize that this is more important than overscheduling our kids.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Can we talk just a little bit about the seven family dining dues? I noticed that some suggestions that came from your office to assist families.
Well, yeah, we have a lot of things that we think, what you ought to do when you have dinner. You can you know, on Sunday when everybody's around, you can say, well, let's pick the nights we're all going to make darn sure we're going to have dinner together this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then get the kids involved in creating ideas for menus. And if they're around, you know, let them even help in preparing the meal. I think it is important to turn the TV off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can
and you also say not to answer phones.
Yeah, let the phone.
Yeah, let it go to voicemail.
Let it go to voicemail. Yeah. Everybody's got voicemail today.
Right.
And then let everybody say something. I mean, about what they did that day, or what they care about, or maybe something they saw on the news, or something they saw in the sports,
mm-hmm.
or something you know your daughter saw in fashion, or what have you. And I think it's very nice to say grace before a meal, so there's a little bit of a ritual and a little bit of a routine there. You know, if the kids don't have to go back upstairs and do homework, play a board game or play something with them so you can keep the conversation going. And I think the other thing, point I'd make here that's very important is the risk that your child is going to get into these substances increases as year by year from 12 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
A particularly dangerous time is when they move from middle school to high school,
mm-hmm.
that first year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And those are normally the number of nights families have dinner together starts to go down when your teens get to be 15 and 16 and 17. And I'd say, please don't let them go down, because that's when they really need you.
Absolutely. Mr. Calfano, it's time for us to take another break. We'll be back in just 1 minute with Joseph Calfano talking about Family Day, September 25th. We'll be right back.
Come join us for 3 nights of spirit-filled praise and worship. The Black Catholic community of the Archdiocese of Chicago, in cooperation with Mission Chicago, invites everyone to attend the Black Catholic Revival, No Ways Tired, celebrating our heritage, creating our future. This revival will appeal to all Catholics with dynamic national speakers, gospel choirs, and liturgical dancers. It will be held Tuesday through Thursday evenings, September 26th through the 28th, at 7 p.m. at Old St. Mary's Church, 1500 South Michigan Avenue in Chicago. Call 312-751-8377 for more information. I'm Sheila Adams, Director of the Office for Black Catholics. I invite all Catholics from our diverse archdiocese to attend No Ways Tired and set your spirit on fire.
Each year in Chicago, 3,000 children are reported sexually abused. The Chicago Children's Advocacy Center restores a trust that was once lost. It's a place where professionals come together under one roof and abused children tell their stories. A place where they can get help immediately. Support the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. For more information or to help, call 1-877-703-HOPE or visit chicagocac.org.
Welcome back to Catholic Families Day on Relevant Radio, 820 AM. We're talking this morning with Joseph Calfano about Family Day.
Mr. Calfano, when we were talking a few minutes ago about the 7 family dining dues, our producer gave us an 8th one, so you may have to change the number. He talked about the dishwasher. Years ago, people had to clear the table. Everybody helped clear the table. Everybody helped scrape. Everybody helped wash, dry, put away. Now, everyone just leaves everything and it goes in the dishwasher and people scatter to their rooms, to their TVs, to their iPads.
That's a very good point. I'm not suggesting that we abandon the dishwasher.
Well, we thank you for that.
My wife would ever forgive me for that.
That's the truth. You know, several years ago, members of the Illinois Catholic Family Ministries Group developed a laminated placemat. Our idea, Mr. Cafano, was to help children learn to say their prayers that maybe they, you know, the parents might not have even known them. But one of the things that we also put on that was some conversation starters, like, you know, what are you most grateful for today? And what has been the biggest challenge, either at home or at work or school or about yourself? And, you know, we thought this would be something that, you know, maybe some parishes might be interested in. We ended up selling over like 60,000 of these in a year's time, and we got such a tremendous response saying it has helped our family so much, you know, to talk as a family, to start off with prayer. And it's really been an amazing thing, and I think it fits into the need that families have. You know, what can we do to assist them to have conversations, to have discussions with their children? Because the kids do want to participate.
Oh, I think they want to participate. And, you know, and having the dentist have a tremendous impact, it's on another level. Let me just, when the head of one of our major food supermarket chains, I was out talking to them to get them to promote Family Day, and he got up and he said, you know, I see the data, but I know personally how important it is. He said, one of my boys was getting into some stuff. I don't know exactly what it was, and I didn't know what to do about it. But the first thing I did was say that from now on, we're going to have dinner every single night together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And he did other things as well, but he said, I watched my son change over that 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great to have that first-person example like that, especially if it's somebody that you're hoping is going to help promote and sponsor the work that you do.
When kids want the time. I mean, you know, when my kids were being raised, we had, you know, quality time and quantity time. I don't know. I just don't buy into that. I think kids need the time, your attention and time to be with you.
You know, Elsie, that's a very important point. And let me just note that in our surveys, we ask kids, would you like to have more frequent dinners or less frequent dinners? And the teenagers overwhelmingly say more. Incidentally, unfortunately, the parents don't overwhelmingly say that.
Well, the parents are getting tired. By the time your kids are teens, and if, you know, the attitudes and all, parents get tired. And I guess I would really want this Family Day to inspire parents to take a deep breath and say, okay, we can do this because we're going to have this family dinner routine we're going to put in place, and they need to get the energy to continue their parenting role.
And right. I think if they saw or realized how important it was, like the person you just referred to that saw the changes in a son, then maybe they'd be willing to put the more, you know, more time and more effort into it.
I think absolutely, and the return is enormous. I mean, believe me, we've been looking at this problem for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and this is one of the most important things any parent can do. And, you know, parents are the front line here. The reality of our society is that there's a lot of stuff in the music that encourages drug use. There's a lot of stuff in the entertainment world. These kids, these substances are incredibly available to kids. I'll give you an example. We know from our surveys now that 20% of 12 to 17-year-olds, 5 million of them, can buy marijuana within an hour. 40% of the nation's 12 to 17-year-olds can buy it within a day. That's 10 million kids.
That's shocking.
But it's true.
Yeah, I know. That
is shocking.
It's unfortunate. Yeah.
We've made no progress on availability. But again, it makes it very important for parents to get, you know, to be engaged in their kids' lives and instill those values into their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mr. Cafano, we just have another minute or two. You know, I saw on the website you have major companies that help sponsor Family Day, from American Express and Coca-Cola and General Mills to Pepsi and, you know, Macy's. Why have they jumped on board? Why have they decided this is an important thing for them to sponsor?
Well, I think, you know, we started with only a couple of sponsors 3 years ago, and now we have many more. I think they're beginning to realize, in part, it's good for their business. It's good for the supermarkets
sure.
to sell food or some of the restaurants. But I think also they found that it goes over very well with their employees. Bristol-Myers Squibb, for example, a huge pharmaceutical company, lets their employees out 2 hours early on Family Day so they can go home and make dinner with their kids and have dinner with their kids. Another company, the CEO, has all of his employees send in pictures, Willis, big insurance, one of the biggest insurance brokers, as people send, their employees send in pictures of having family dinner that night, and he picks one picture out and goes and has dinner with that family.
Boy, that's wonderful.
I think the companies have found it is a great thing for them to do. And remember, please, your listeners, they can pledge, and we'd love to have them pledge. CasaFamilyDay.org.
Well, that's exactly where we want to end up this this morning, saying go to www.casafamilyday.org. Take a look at that website. It'll make you hungry when you see Detective Lukowski out there. It's a great website. It really gets you. Make the pledge. Be supportive of Family Day. Be supportive of your children. That's what we try to do here in the Archdiocese of Chicago, through our schools, through our religious education programs, and through the Family Ministries Office. Mr. Califano, thank you so much for sharing with us everything that you've been doing, your organization has been doing to support families.
And thank you for the good work on that front. Wow.
Oh, well, thank you, Elsie, and thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And for more information about the Family Ministries Office, contact us at 312-751-8351 or visit our website at www.familyministries.org. We'll see you next month. Take care, everybody.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 820 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.